Instructional Designers in Offices Drinking Coffee is brought to you by Domino, makers of Domino One, the all-in-one cloud-based e-learning authoring tool for teams. You can learn more at domino.com. That's DOMINKNOW.com. Now, here's this week's episode.
Everybody now. Extra special happy good morning to everybody.
Hello, gang. It sounds like it's hot everywhere.
It does. It must be summertime or something. What the heck?
Summertime plus, you know, when the tarmac is melting at airports in the UK, something's up, maybe. But anyway.
We got some heat.
We do.
Well, I got all the wrong buttons pushing on me. There we go. News.
A couple of news announcements before we jump into today's session. First of all, just we haven't really focused on this much, but this is the last episode for this season. Brett and I are taking a break over August, and we'll be back in early September. Keep your eyes peeled for the upcoming sessions, etc., so on and so forth. But we just wanted to let everybody know that.
Indeed.
And also, recently, like just a week or two ago, we surpassed 150,000 downloads of the audio version of Idiotic Episodes. So we're throwing a little contest, you know, to celebrate that. And if you're interested, there are some idiotic mugs up for grabs if you hit our socials and check out the contest that's going on there.
I forgot my mug trick.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Yes, you're going to do that. I'm going to do this. Okay.
Wait, God, I did this one.
Oh.
Hey, this one probably fits right in there.
Okay. Yeah, there we go. Yeah.
Okay. Good. Makes for a good image. Oh, yeah. Look at that right there. I got all the logos and everything. There we go.
Yeah, perfect.
Cool. Sorry. Yeah. People on the podcast are like, what's going on right now?
Oh, they hear the clinking of the mugware, but they don't know that you're holding. It's like that portion of Sesame Street with the guy on the steps and he's yelling five banana cream pies, except it's Brent with idiotic mugs. If you can picture that, folks. Maybe that's a generational reference. You know what? There's a search engine somewhere that will find that for you. If you just
indeed
in five banana cream pies, you'll find it, I'm sure.
And speaking of looking for things on the internet, you can always get all the information about what's going on with Idiotic at idiotic.com. It's the easiest URL for a show you'll ever find. So go there whenever you need extra information. I mean, why not, right?
Okay. No,
it's the best thing to do.
I even put that in the chat.
Hey, look at that. That's impressive.
We are like turning pro at this, Brent.
Well, speaking of turning pro, we've got a guest today. Who the heck's hanging out with us, Chris?
Friends, we have Mike Simmons joining us. Mike, you've been with us before, but might have been a little while since folks have caught up with you. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, first, I'm impressed by how much more professional the production is.
True. Yeah.
So congratulations on 150,000 downloads. That's it's an awesome milestone. My name's Mike Simmons. I am one of those people who's still trying to figure out what the heck I want to be when I grow up. I found my passion though in the EdTech and enablement technology space, where you leverage technology to help humans do better human things, whatever that means. So whether we're talking about automation so that they can go in and do more of the things that the human needs to do, or it's learning tech, which is where I got my background back in the old days, and a company called SmartForce, if anybody remembers them before they were one of the first companies to get acquired by Skillsoft way back in the day. Anyhow, so I live in Arizona, not too far from Brent. I've got a podcast, and I help organizations get better at leadership, culture, and generating revenue.
Very cool. And we're talking today about that sort of the ending there of what you were referencing, but we're talking about organizational enablement, which is an interesting phrase. You know, it's funny, I was thinking, you know, enablement, there was a phase where an awful lot of folks were using enabler as a negative thing, like, oh, you're an enabler, letting, you know, helping people with their problems, I guess, or supporting people with their problems. But that's not really what we're, you know, that's not the phrasing or the use of the term enablement that that we're focused on today. We're talking about it from a positive angle, I'm assuming. Maybe we want to talk about
that's the challenging thing. Bad enablement can create really bad things inside an organization. So like, it's, you can enable for good or you can enable for bad. I mean, think about technology. There are some amazing things that you can do with a car. There are some horrific things that you can do with a car. Technology can be used for good and bad. Process can be used for good and bad. Information can be used for good and bad. Design can be used for good and bad. And I think that word enablement is one of the words I've struggled with most around this. And if we go back, I know we like the back in the day references. Back in 2014, we created a sales enablement function inside the organization I was with. We struggled with what we were going to call it. And ultimately, we decided to call it sales enablement. Now, kind of like the instances out there where there's all of this stuff happening out in the ecosystem and you think you're the first person who discovered fire, and actually there's a bunch of other people who discovered fire, but they were on a different island than you were. Mm-hmm. Sales enablement had been out there for a little bit of time, but it had not gained the attention that it has now. Well, as we started looking at that, the reason to build it inside the organization was to help enable members of our revenue team to engage better with our customers and engage better inside the organization, not create as much noise inside the organization. So from that point forward, I started looking at enablement as a good thing, not as this negative thing where, you know, codependency and some of the other stuff that usually comes up when thinking of the word enablement. But that was where I first started thinking about seeing and building things related to enablement functions inside an organization. We started on the sales side. And the reason we started on the sales side is because we just weren't getting what we needed from the rest of the organization. We weren't getting what we needed from marketing. We weren't getting what we needed from ops. We weren't getting what we needed from other areas. So as a bunch of type A people who don't like sitting on things and are able to go out and generate revenue and use that revenue to support investment and other things, we would decide to create a function and a capability inside the business.
Well, it's a consistency that you get in sales enablement. And that's, I think, the interesting thing. And when I think about it, I think about just extending that sales enablement, because I think every organization now has some sort of sales enablement role. And I think most organizations even use that term. And there's no reason why, if you think about it, if you've got a special team to enable your sales team to perform better, why wouldn't you have, you know, teams that help all the other elements of your organization perform better and to enable their performance, right? We talk about the different things in instructional design and L&D terms, right? But we like to make up our own words, right? You know, I think to myself, if the business already understands what sales enablement is, maybe it'd make a lot more sense to the business if we kind of just leveraged that term and dragged it over to the org side of things. So it feels like we can learn a lot from what's been done in sales enablement, And this also helps support a lot of that cultural stuff that we talk about too, right? Like, you know, everyone talks about fixing culture. L&D should be the one responsible for fixing the culture in the organization. Organizational enablement, as I kind of initially think of it, maybe I'm wrong, Mike, but maybe that's kind of where we can start.
Yeah, we, and in the way, way, way back in the Wayback Machine, we did a, there was a presentation I delivered at an event where I was talking about that. Does L&D become organization enablement, or an enablement, or is it repurposed as this enablement function inside the organization, or rebranded so that it doesn't feel like something that you go to when you have to do compliance, or you go to when people get really, really, what's the word, pedantic about how things are done or why things are done in a certain way. So I thought there'd be this shift where we'd say, okay, let's, if this is something that really helps humans do better human things inside an organization so that they can support humans outside of the organization, what happens if you actually do it for all the humans across the organization? And I think it's an interesting direction that will go in, where now people have to, if you're going to enable somebody, you have to detach, you have to step back, you have to observe the whole thing, because the people who are doing all of the work in the detail, the people who are in the trenches, are really working hard doing the work. They don't have the time to see all of the other things that are going around. So it's really hard to have that function be inside the business unit that's doing all of the work. So now you start to pull it back and create this space for someone to look at, how's the machine operating on the whole? Now, how are the parts? Are the parts aligned? So yeah, Brent, I think you're right on. And that's why there was a jump that I didn't anticipate as we started when we did that talk way back when. And what I didn't see is it spreading across the entire revenue team. So now you're starting to see phrases like revenue enablement. And that's become new in the last 12 to 18 months, as you're starting to bridge the gap between what happens in marketing, sales, customer success. And now, and you're also seeing things like revenue, rev ops. And then if you go and you look at all of the other groups that are out there, meaning this is not some crazy dude with a black t-shirt in Arizona who's talking nuts. There are functional entities inside the business that are being created, like and capabilities like DevOps. So you have DevOps, you have RevOps, and you're starting to see business BizOps, and so all of the ops. So depending on where you fall in from a marketing perspective or a functional role perspective or how you're generating revenue, you might call it something differently inside the organization. And unfortunately, I think that's where these capabilities start to break down, because people then start to create their silos and have their biases and say, well, no, I own this technology. You can't bring this new technology in. So I think we're at the beginning stages of something that's going to be, maybe it's a renaissance that happens inside organizations where we start thinking more about how do we enable people inside the organization so that they can work better with customers, so that those customers can grow, so that our business can grow, so that we can hire more people inside the organization. I think we're in an interesting time period. What do you guys think?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a couple of comments in the chat. Let's throw those in. Lisa's mentioning, I like the differentiated term from organizational development, which feels more like an evolution than a revolution. So, and I was thinking, yeah, I mean, if we're the training department, or are you the enabling department? Just even changing the phrasing on it suggests a whole bunch of new opportunities, right? Training kind of puts us in this place of presenting info, you know, on a push kind of basis. Enabling says, how else can we help? Maybe, you know, it kind of broadens your perspective potentially. So, yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say the same thing. It's like, it feels like when you talk about ops, right? Or the operations manager, or the biz ops, you know, all the stuff, all the ops you were just referencing, right? Those folks they're siloed, right? And they're very much into their space. And a lot of what they do feels to me like it's the detail oriented stuff, you know, ops. How do I get the systems in place? How do I define the processes, and how do we keep it, you know, the ops running and all that kind of stuff? And when you level up one more step to enablement of the organization, to me, that's like, okay, all the ops stuff is in place, but now how do we enable the humans to engage effectively? Or how do we look at how the one siloed ops interacts with the other siloed ops? And, you know, and then are people actually opping in the way the ops have designed the ops?
Well, and how do you know when you're right in the middle of your op? Right?
Right. Yeah.
You get stuck, and it's so easy to have it happen. I mean, last year I joined one of my clients full time, and I would say it was the worst year of leadership that I have ever experienced for myself. Like, I did not lead the way that I expect someone of my capability, my experience level, and my capacity to lead. Part of the reason for that was I was behind on time zone. I was behind on sleep. My health was going absolutely nuts. I couldn't be present because I was, and when I was there, I would wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning, my time, and go right into meetings because it was 11 o'clock in the morning, their time, or, you know, 3:15 for a 3:30 meeting or something like that. So I was in this constant reactive mode, and I thought, wow, someone of my capability, unable to lead my way out of a wet paper bag inside this organization, how does that happen? How do we create the freedom, the space for people to separate and back out and have and support operational effectiveness, broadly speaking? There's a reason why the ops support team in special operations isn't in the field with everybody else. Like, there are people that are there to support it, but there's a whole other group that are in cool places like, you know, bases in Florida that are supporting the actual stuff that's happening in the field. How are we doing that for our people? Where the in the field is inside the organization, it's inside their homes, it's inside the interaction they're having with customers. Where are we creating this functional team inside the organization, both the from a people, process, and technology, to be able to support it? And I think it's a miss that we have in organizations, and the high performing organizations have solved for it in a number of different ways. They either have, like Craig was talking about, the fix it person. They've got the wolf that goes out there and kind of gets some certain things done from time to time.
Don't they call the tiger team? I think I remember that, the fix it team. Whenever there's a major problem, we pull together a tiger team, and that team would form briefly, fix a major problem, and then disband.
Well, and think about how cool that team is. So you pull that team together, and that team is not a bunch of people who all know the same thing about a thing. It's a bunch of people who all have a different perspective coming together to solve the problem, because you're not good. If you have everybody surrounding that problem with the same background and same experience, you're going to have some really deep biases that you're going to use to address the problem. So now you start to get into, okay, how do you build a team that can do this kind of stuff? And how do you draw from other areas of the organization so you don't create those significant biases of, no, everything that we do has to be developed this certain way because this is the way that I develop things. I don't know. Technology continues to change and process continues to change. So, I think there's another one of the challenges we'll have is this gap on that enablement word, because that's the first thing that comes up. People are like, well, enablement, well, what does that mean? Mm-hmm. Today, if you say enablement out loud inside a revenue team, what do you think the most common thing is that people think that enablement team does?
Training.
100% training. What do you think the second thing is that they do?
Support.
Create documents. Mm. So they train people and they create stuff. So what do we do? Now what we did is we took this functional team that was going to do something really good, and then we turned it into a training and development team.
We reduced it down to a training and documentation creation team. It's like that.
Mountains Gal has thrown in the chat. I've heard the term enabler as someone that helps other people connect with things and people to get what they need, they want done, or generate and support ideas. And that's, I mean, that's the, it's the, you know, the support with the small s, you know, lifting, all kinds of different ways that that could be viewed.
Well, if we think about it, let me jump in here, Chris, real quick. If we think about it from an instructional design perspective and what we normally talk about on Idiotic, right, and all of those things, we often talk a lot about the expanding role of training and development in L&D, right? And we don't just create training anymore. And we so desperately want the rest of the organization to know that. We want them to know that we've got these tools now that create micro learning, that we can create videos, we can create, nudging is a new one that came up recently. That's a hot button. And there's all of these things that we do, right? Support, performance support, right? Bob Mosier and the five moments of need and all of those different things that we do, this whole landscape of things that we do. And I don't think L&D or corporate training encompasses all of that. And perhaps this idea of organization enablement is that shift that will make that click in the rest of the organization's mind as to what it is we can do as professionals within the organization. And maybe I'm just dreaming, but it feels like that's kind of where the shift is going.
Why do instructional designers exist?
To design instruction.
Come on, man. why do instructional designers exist?
Well, it depends on what perspective you're answering the question from. I'll say that. Okay. Chris, I'll let you answer this one. What's your first thought?
Well, we can talk about the history of how we even came up with the ideas of instructional design, you know, how that moved from systems-oriented organizations like the military out to the larger training world. But ultimately, in my mind, the notion of an instructional designer is at least someone who has the credentials to be able to do things like create training programs or create learning opportunities, et cetera, based on a set of, foundational principles, et cetera, to give structure to that, as opposed to the, I learned to be a trainer by osmosis because that's what other people were doing in my department, or that's how I've always, so it's about it's about providing foundationals and credential experience, et cetera, to know that we're doing good things when we're doing something like creating a training program, et cetera. That's my reaction to the question.
Yeah.
Yeah, you struck a nerve with that, Mike, as we get everybody's definition popping into the chat. But it's interesting, after how many, we're at 199 episodes today, in case anybody was wondering or keeping track. And I don't think we've ever asked that question.
So there's a couple of things I heard, and there's some things that I saw in the chat. And Joe, I think you're right. Or from an organization development, OD perspective, I think there's a lot of intention that was done here. What I think ends up happening, though, kind of like the story I shared with the enablement piece, where now it's turned into they're training people and then they're creating content. I believe, and again, this is one person's opinion, based on experience and perspective and some deep thought around it, I believe that what ends up happening is it's easy to see the training when it's delivered, and it's easy to see the content when it's created, and it's easy to keep track of the butts that were in the seats, and it's easy to do those things. Those are simple pieces of information that can be tracked and recorded. And when leadership starts managing organizations by a spreadsheet, it's good to have stuff that can go into a spreadsheet and be put onto a chart and have graphic information that shows us all cool things. But we know from the work that we do that the magic happens in the margins. The magic happens in the spark when I'm coaching someone, or I start to watch some human factor work and see work get done in a certain way, and we remove a step that isn't necessary, or we add a piece of technology to support the thing that's happening there. it's hard to explain that that's what someone is doing because, well, okay, well, that gets, it doesn't show up really well on the spreadsheet. So then you start to break it apart and say, okay, when we're talking about enablement or we're talking about operational effectiveness, what are some of the things? Well, we need humans to be able to do better human things. So there's some behavior and culture items related to that. Well, we've got technology that can do some better technology things. Well, there's design and implementation and execution stuff that goes into that. And then there's some stuff that pulls both of those together, which is more of the process stuff. So now we've got these three gears, really cool. We can go back to some of the cool PowerPoint slides where everybody likes the three gears and how they rotate together. And what we want to do is have those things align. But we've got the alignment of people, process, and technology. On the people side, one of the things I think we can do better as humans who are helping humans is understand behavior change. So we get into things like the nudging. And there's a model that comes out of the UK called CalmB around behavior change. And the C stands for capability. Capability, to me, I put it into two categories. Capability are skill, or knowledge. Does somebody have the knowledge? Do they know what to do? Do they have the information? Skill, can they actually do the thing? I know what a slam dunk is. I do not have the skill to slam dunk anything unless I'm using a net that's a 6 foot high net, or I have a really cool trampoline in front of it. But so capability, then opportunity. Have we created the right operating environment for people to do that thing? Like when things get really messy, they go to the leadership development training session that we put on for a week and everybody goes back into the work and they start doing the work. And then someone says, well, how are things looking on the spreadsheet? And then we go back to the spreadsheet. Have we created the right opportunity? And then the last one is motivation. Do they have the right motivation? Are they really bought into it? So if we have capability, opportunity, motivation, now we can start to see behavior change. In that opportunity piece, that's where we start to get into some of the culture pieces. Cool. Somebody just dropped the link. Thank you, Joe.
I think she's saying that's the wrong link. So
C-O-M. C-O-M-B. I'll Chris prepared me beforehand. He's like, if you have any links, have a word doc with the links up there. And here I am going to, oh yeah, oops.
This is why we do what we do. So I'll add a little bit to this from an instructional design perspective to kind of tie this in. Everybody, the chat, the comments you guys are making are fantastic. You guys are spot on, I think, in the questioning and your thinking. And just one of the observations that I'll point out is in my experience, and I've heard this from others, but you guys tell me, right, when you're going through the ADDIE process, or whether you call it the ADDIE process or whatever, whenever somebody says we need some training, or they engage with the training department or whatever you call your department, L&D, whatever, the first thing you do is you go out and you analyze, you go check, you look at things, you start talking to people. More often than not, we start to realize that there's more, or there's other things that should or could be done to solve this problem more effectively than creating a course or a training class. And I think, and the expectation though is always that we're just going to snap our fingers and that magic in the margins is just going to happen and we're going to whip up a course. But as good, you know, practiced instructional professional designers, we go out and we discover that larger picture, right? That larger ops opportunity, and there's all these other things that can be done. That to me is what fixes this problem, because we've been complaining about this problem, and I say we as in the entire industry, about this, like, ever since I got into the industry. It's always been a thing, right? Is it training? It's hardly ever training, blah blah blah, all that kind of stuff. And I think helping businesses move in this direction, I think is a good way for us to be able to take that thing that we're so good at, that analysis phase and that deep thinking and that bringing in all the data and going, huh, maybe training isn't such a good idea, and gives us a platform to present that data. Whereas, oh, I'm just the training guy. You don't have that platform. You don't have that I don't know if I want to say clout, but you just, people don't perceive you as the person to deliver that message. And so it's not going to be received if they even get it at all. But if you're an org enablement guy and your job is to look at all the ops and all that kind of stuff, right? And your job is to present something that's going to enable the organization. That could be a lot of the things that we talk about all the time, right? It could be performance support. It could be a training course. It could be an e-learning self-paced course. It could be compliance. It could be, you know, buying a library of content. You know, it could be a lot of the different things that we do. And I think that it starts to open up that opportunity. So I don't want to ramble on too much about that, but I do see us as doing this stuff. There's just this block. And I think it's just the terminology and the expectations and the perception. And I think after all these years, I think changing to this term enablement could be one of those things that we can start to do to give us those opportunities to be more impactful within the organization. But that's just me. Mm-hmm. I wanted to jump in right underneath Mountain Gal's comment. Buddy says, I think it was Buddy's that I saw. Could using the term enablement minimize the importance of a training and development team by almost putting us beneath the departments or roles we support instead of putting us as peers or stakeholders? And I thought that was really interesting, but I'll let you answer that.
I love this question. And the reason I love this question is because it gets into the whole seat at the table discussion. Mm-hmm. And then the next question is which table? So like everybody's been to a wedding or a family reunion or Thanksgiving at your own house.
I sit at the kids' table.
Except for you, Joe. We have Thanksgiving because you kicked us out of your country. We have these. Are you at the right table? And do the other tables even care that table exists? And where does it integrate into the system? So this is where I think that the capability. Yeah, thank you, Joe. This is where that capability becomes so important that we realize it's not about us. It's not about us. It's about the people that we're trying to impact. It's about the organization we're trying to impact. And it's about determining the best place for these things to exist, the capability to exist in order to operate effectively. In the sales arena, there's a debate about where do sales development reps sit. And so everybody has their own acronyms. Everybody's got them. We've got these things called SDRs and BDRs. The SDRs and BDRs are the people who are sending you cold emails. They're calling you on the phone. It's this shop of people that are going to do a lot of the activity so that the hard charging account executive can come in and close the business. And then after the business gets closed, they can pass it over to customer success. And now customer success can help you grow the business. So we have these functional areas that happen. Well, there's a debate around where does the SDR or BDR team sit? Do they sit under the VP of sales? Do they sit under the VP of marketing? Do they sit someplace else inside the organization? My view of the world, we're having the wrong conversation. they fit wherever they belong. They fit where they belong. Because if you put them in the wrong place with the wrong leadership, they're not going to be as effective as they can be inside their role. They're not going to be leveraged in the way that they can impact the role. So one of the debates in sales enablement way back when, the Sales Enablement Society, was sales enablement should report directly to the CEO. Everybody wants to report directly to the CEO until they report to the CEO. And then once they report to the CEO, they're like, wait, what? So it's, I think that's the wrong, it's one of those things where I think the right answer is it depends. It depends on a couple of factors. What's the goal? What's the objective? What are we actually trying to accomplish? What lens do we look at these problems through? Do we look at the problem through the lens of our customer, the people that we serve, the people who actually spend money so that we can continue to operate the business? Do we look at it through the lens of the business? the profitability of the business, the way the business operates, or do we look at it through the lens of the employee, the people who make everything work inside the organization? And just like the pyramid of learning styles and pyramid of all kinds of stuff that get thrown on pyramids, people turn these things upside down and they turn them right side up and they become some kind of marketing function, and ultimately it distracts from what's the objective. And I think if we ask this question on the front end, we will be in a much better position to start solving some of these really hard problems, rather than just talking around each other in circles, wondering who gets the seat at the table when the music stops. You guys have pushed me onto rant after rant this morning. I don't know that I'm ever going to get invited back. Good knowing everybody. Thank you.
It's all spot on, though. I mean, this is great. I mean, I love these types of conversations because it is sparking a boatload. I can't even keep up with the chat and everything that everybody has dropped in and talked about and discussed. I'll pause us for 1 second. Chris, did you see anything that caught your eye?
Well, I am scrolling back up to a comment that Amy made, like, 23 minutes ago. It tells me I've been waiting to throw it in because we're back to this point again. Organizational transformation has to be top down and bottom up. Both directions have to be on the same page. The top level has to allow and empower enablement at the bottom and be listening and adapting to those who do the work. Management can either be a barrier or the conduit. We started here and Amy put the comment in, and now after some discussion, we're back in that, and that comment's still applicable.
Well, let me trigger another rant for you, Mike. We've all experienced this. If you've worked in large companies before, you've probably experienced the cycle of centralization, right? But at one moment, all training must be pulled together under one central organization. And that takes a couple years or so to actually happen and pull all this together. And then new leadership comes in, or somebody changes their mind, or they read a new book and they realize that, you know, what would be really great is if we put training within operations, get them closer to the team. And so let's disband the centralization and let's have each one of the ops and each one of the different organizations have their own little training department. And then we will just support all of these scattered training departments. And that works great for another couple years, 3 years, 5 years. And then somebody else comes in and says, this is crazy. This is really tough. This is hard to manage. Let's pull them all together and centralize this function and go through and do this. So the way I start thinking about this is maybe this is a good opportunity to break that cycle. I think we can have centralization of the things, just the things that work best centralized, but then you also can have the training departments embedded in the different teams that are doing the specialty work of understanding that specific org, and we're able to feed that stuff out, and the enablement org can be that org that has things like analytics people, data people, all those things that a small, tiny training org within one organization maybe can't have because their budget's smaller and they're super targeted and super focused. But if you've got this enablement team, that's where those people that we all start talking about, that I see people blogging about and writing on LinkedIn about, you know, we need more data analytics people. We need XAPI. We got to figure out how to get the right data and all this kind of stuff. Well, where are you going to put that person? You can't put them on the ops team. You know, then they're lost. They don't know how to engage and how to be supportive. But if you've got an enablement team that focuses on that higher level thinking and the big picture thinking, that's where the gold is, I think.
And I don't think you can do it too early. Like, even in a small organization, imagine if you think of it in the context of additive manufacturing, right? You're continuing to layer on pieces of stuff to things to manufacture a bigger part, rather than the traditional, older way of taking things away, you know, where we're milling and we're moving things. So what if we looked at this as a capability that we need inside our organization, and we're going to continue to add on layers and create that next level of complexity when it's necessary, not create it just for the sake of creating it. And a lot of times what ends up happening with those leaders that come into the organization, it's like, well, I got to make a change. Well, what's a quick thing that I can make a change? Oh, we've got everybody decentralized. They're all in the business units. We're going to pull everybody back together and go take the centralized approach for a period of time. And then there are some people who've been around the organization long enough, and they're like, didn't we do this before? Does anybody have the notes on how we made the decision to go the other way? Oh, no, you know, that was just the right time inside the business, and nobody remembers the history as they go through it. I think there are so many components that fall into this. If you're going to have technology, you should have data. That data should help accelerate learning, which should help you improve process. Both the technology and the data and the improvement of process should help people do better things. But there's always going to be things that the humans are doing in the field that nobody knows about until someone likes some of the people on this call or others go in and ask and observe. And even when they ask, they don't even realize that they're doing it. You've got to observe and you've got to see those things happen, because there's some things that we do just automatically that we're not, some of the subconscious work that we, the work that happens just naturally because we've done it over and over and over again. And we didn't realize that, hey, there's a reason why I hold the hammer this way, or there's a reason why I do these things in this order. So ideally, this is something that helps us communicate better as an organization. And I think if there's a takeaway from the conversation to get it really practical, the first thing to do beyond understanding what the goal is. So let's say the first thing to do is understand what the goal is. The next thing to do is have high level of clarity around the vocabulary you're using. Because if ops talks about this as a cup and marketing talks about it as a mug, and somebody else talks about it as something else, and then we're communicating about using different words to describe the same thing, all we're doing is creating unnecessary friction inside our business and potential risk. So focus on the goal, gain clarity around the definitions of terms, which means you've got to talk with people and validate how they refer to this thing. And then have some standards built into the organization, which a lot of people struggle with. It's like, well, you know what? I'm creative. I don't need to have all these standards. If you make me do it this way, then I won't be able to demonstrate all of the other things. Yeah, okay. You're creative one step at a time.
And as you're more of a guideline than a rule is what I try to tell people when I'm trying to implement processes. It's like consistency is important and we need a process. And I'm as frustrated with process as most people, even though I like to create processes because it makes life easier, right? You know, but it's more of a guideline than a rule. If you need to be creative, there are moments that you can allow yourself to step outside the guidelines. They're more like the dashed lines in the road. You can cross them if you want, but it's recommended that you don't, especially when there's traffic coming the other way. But we could go on and on. And actually, Mike and I have gone on and on together about this multiple times, which is why, Mike, it's so fun to have you here. Thanks for hanging out with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Thanks for not kicking me out early or, you know, coming up with a situation where all of a sudden I can't, something went bad.
No, it's awesome. And let's re-engage with those announcements real quick. And people, don't drop off just yet. Hang out for a second. Let us tell you a few things for those of you that joined late. We got a couple stories. Chris, jump in for me here.
As we mentioned at the start, this is the last episode of this season. We're taking the August break off and we're starting it a little bit early this year, but we're back in September, so keep your eyes posted on places like idiotic.com. We'll toss that one in to the chat there. we're already lining up the September season, so lots of neat conversations that we're going to have.
It's going to be great.
The next round. Also, we passed a nice milestone just the last week or so, passing 150,000 downloads of the audio version of all the idiotic episodes in total, and we're throwing a little celebration in our social medias. And hey, gang, there's some idiotic mugs on the line here and available. So pop into our socials and there goes Brent with his tower of mugs.
If the other one didn't have coffee in it, I'd stack that in there too, but it might fall over. And I think, Mike, I think one of these is yours. I meant to give it to you when you were over, but I forgot. Sorry.
Yeah. Thanks. I don't know when that I don't have my original. So now I figure I'm going to get two. Do I get, you get two, sure. Like, can I build these up? Can I put them up like Stanley Cups?
Absolutely.
That's one of the recommended uses of them. Yeah, is to, you know, display them prominently.
That's what I'm going
to
do. I'm going to build a little stand on the bottom here, and I'm going to label it for each time you show up on the show. So far you got two rings, okay?
One of the things, we talked a little bit about leadership, but we didn't get into it. If we do, what time do we wrap this? What time do you guys wrap?
Yeah, we should have wrapped up already.
All right, so you're gonna have to bring me back on.
Let's bring you back
at some point in time, because there are things that drive me absolutely insane about how we point the finger at the people who are leading rather than leading self. And if you're not leading self, you don't deserve to point the finger at others. Leadership is. It starts with self. So
I love that. Let's do that. Let's plan that. I think anytime we start or have an episode with those, personal development skills and starting from there, people really enjoy that stuff. So yeah, let's write one of those up. But anything else, Chris? What did we miss? So we got a great social media contest. Oh, how about dropping in all of our social media stuff? So follow us on Twitter. Where else?
LinkedIn. Facebook, all of those common places. And I've tossed some of those.
Oh, great.
Already. We must, as always, as you get ready to start playing us out with the theme song, our last.
Indeed, it's coming in.
Don't forget, folks, what makes it all possible here is that Idiotic is sponsored by Domino One, or by Domino Learning Systems, makers of Domino One. Oh, my God, I've only worked here 20 years. How can I mess it all up like that? Anyway, if that's of interest, we can help you solve a lot of problems. So check that out. There's a link in the chat.
Yeah, no, my gosh, I totally forgot, Mike. Yeah, definitely tell everybody about your podcast. If you like to think about this kind of stuff, and Mike gets some amazing people, former Disney executives and authors chatting with him about this kind of stuff on his podcast. So definitely check it out, everybody.
Episode 300 went live last week.
Ooh, nice. Ooh. Congrats. Congratulations. Well, folks, it's going to be sad to be gone for 5 weeks. I'm going to miss you guys. I'm going to miss you, Chris. I'm tearing up already.
Hey, folks, download the audio version, and then you can at least listen to the music every week when we're gone.
Ah, there you go.
Awesome. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Mike. So much so much fun having you with us, as always. And we'll set up another session. We'll maybe explore some of these other channels.
Indeed. Thanks, everybody in the chat. You guys are awesome. I'm going to export that, all those comments. Here we go. Let's get out of here. Enjoy your week, everybody. More mugs. Adios, everybody.